Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris. Once again, our guests are Mike Novak-Smith and Ted Becker. Mike is not only one of the largest REO agents in the Inland Empire, but the nation. Mike is in the top 1% of all real estate agents nationwide and is experienced in REO, short sales, bankruptcies, asset management, and negotiating. Mike specializes in REOs in Riverside, Moreno Valley, San Bernardino, Paris, Rialto, Colton, and Corona. Ted Becker is the owner and broker of RE/MAX Results in Moreno Valley, having started the company in 1989. Ted has vast experience in real estate and has been able to train and lead 36 of Southern California's highest producing real estate brokers and agents to close deals quickly and efficiently for a variety of clients in commercial, residential, multifamily, and office real estate. Nationwide Home Loans, Inc. and RE/MAX Results Escrow Division are associated companies. And before that, Ted practiced law. So thank you again for joining us. I just want to touch on a subject that we just covered where short sales are gaining momentum. Has the process become simpler and quicker?
Yes.
It has.
There is definitely an improvement. The banks have, I think, have geared up because of the either direction from government or realization that this is the only way they're going to survive the process. They have, I think, shifted a lot of people into the short sale divisions, if you will, and have definitely shortened the time frames. There's still a lot of work to do, but I think there's still a lot of work to do in the numbers of short sales they can handle. They have a few very good negotiators or asset managers. They need probably 10 times that many to be able to handle the numbers of short sales that are coming.
Have you ever looked at the losses compared to a house, you know, a similar house going the REO route versus a short sale route?
I think oftentimes a short sale can be more effective, but it depends on the time frames. And one thing with the REOs is the REO seller does control the process. They're using agents that are very effective at it, and they speed them through. I have watched short sales where I close the REO in 2 months from start to finish, and 14 months later, they're still on the market and still in escrow with the short sale. So if it's done right, the short sale would be a quicker way to do it, but you've got to have control of the process or it'll run late.
I think what you say is true, Mike, with the exception of that the banks are improving their time frames.
I agree.
So I think in fairness even to the banks today and the companies that they're shoving these properties off to, they are doing a pretty good job of getting up to speed.
Well, it's got to be pretty detrimental to the agent, for instance. If I'm a first-time buyer and I'm with my wife and I'm saying, okay, let's make an offer, and then it's sort of like, we'll let you know in 5 months is about the time frame. You know, you got to think you're never going to do that a second time, even if you hung in there for the 5 months. You will never make an offer on a second short sale because you got to make a decision to go live somewhere.
Very probably. I'm not sure how the agents are all handling that issue, but it's a real issue.
Yeah, that time frame. And you just wonder, well, I'm a lender. Somebody asked me, do you want to take a short sale? It would take me about 30 seconds to do the math and say, yeah. I mean, so why months and months? What's so involved that can't be solved quicker?
Well, I'll tell you our experience today with short sales. We're doing a lot for one particular company, which shall remain unnamed at this point. But we have we've found properties that have seconds that nobody knew about, second loans that have been sold in the secondary market, in some cases days ago. Didn't know there was a second, getting ready to close, found out there was a second, but we sold it a week ago to another company. Now we have to start all over with that other company. The deal falls apart.
Right.
So, in fact, there's the best one we have so far. I'll throw it in quickly. Is first holder made a first. The second, the owner came in, took out a second. Somebody in the process forgot to subordinate the second to the first. And there is now a $60,000 second that is now in front of a $150,000 first. And the very likelihood is the owner of the home is going to end up with a $60,000 first on his house. and the second will be out with zero.
That's not very entertaining when you buy one of those at a trustee sale either, which does happen.
Yeah.
And that's pretty sad. Kind of on a side note, you got 80% of sales going either REO or short sale. The assumption is all of those people become renters. What's your opinion of that as they go from here to there? What do they do?
I'd guess half become renters and half move in with someone else. Their parents move to Nevada and move to somewhere where they can get into something either free or very inexpensive.
So they actually they become non-households.
I believe that's true.
I think that's true, too.
And I think about half, probably.
That's a very big impact when you're talking about potential buyers, is that they're credit incapable. And yeah, they don't have the money to live with that extra burden of debt either. They can't get a new loan, but not only that, they can't really even afford the household cost. And so for the time being, they're downsizing. See, I think it was of the next cycle, that's not going to be forever okay with that, either one, the person that owns the house they're living in the back room or the people in the back room.
Correct.
They'd like to emerge someday and go, see y'all later, it's been fun. And if you can pick the time frame of that event, then you'll have excess demand.
Well, that theoretically should be 2 to 3 years from now.
That is true.
Assuming credit repair happens in 2 or 3 years.
Yes. Or, okay, now let's...
Or the rules change.
You know, it's an interesting thing. And having visited Washington now and talked to those people, you realize this is all very political instead of common sense. Mm-hmm. If they wanted common sense suggestions, they'd probably find that pretty easy to get. But trying to mix it with political acceptance is a whole different story. In the 90s, there was a niche that emerged that you became very familiar with and something that investors did actually a lot of in the 80s. So when I became an investor, one of the niches was you'd have a 7% mortgage existing on loans, say, prior to 75. And in 1981 or 2, interest rates were 17. And if you could move that financing forward to another buyer, you could wrap it. It was allowed. There was something called a simple assumption. Cost me $45. I'd take my name and say, pick mine instead of the other guy's, put it on there. He had no more liability. I had no new liability. It was like the loan only could be paid back by the residents, and that was its sole responsibility. Well, they changed that being acceptable, but there was hybrids that emerged in the 90s. And you were very
Correct.
Familiar with how to create those. So what was the vehicle that you guys used to, say, sell somebody a home who probably wouldn't necessarily qualify for bank financing, but you could get them to be an owner of a home?
Well, I preferred what was called a land sale contract or a land contract. Many people favor an all-inclusive trust deed. My whole point about favoring the land contract was that it did not create a grant deed, which would, in those days, tip off a lender that a sale had occurred. The recorded document was a contract between the two parties, which memorialized the fact that one party would pay the other party a certain amount of money in 5 years, let's say. That was less of a tip-off. In today's world, I don't think either one is necessarily better over the other. The fact is, I think they'll come back.
I think they will. And I don't, you know, sometimes it's the mood of the lender, because the only thing you'd be concerned about is a due on sale clause
Correct.
Being aggressively pursued by a lender. I can't imagine the guy's desk who decides to foreclose on a current loan because there was a breach on the due on sale clause in 2012.
He'd be fired.
He'd be fired pretty quick.
I've had many lenders tell me in the 90s, I used to hear this. I'd say, you know, they did an AITD or a land contract. They says, we don't care as long as we get our money. Don't tell us. Like, we're getting the check every month. We're okay.
Well, the gentleman I sat across from FHA in the meeting that we had, I said, it'd sure be helpful if we could just take over subject to the existing loans. He says, I don't care. I said, would you put that in writing for me? And, of course, he couldn't do that. But, well, a contract of sale, I think people would relate to that more if you used it like a car sale. A car sale usually has a lien holder that actually has title.
Correct.
That's the pink slip. They almost hold the pink slip until the deal is made, whatever the deal is. Doesn't mean in a car sense it's usually paid off, but in a land contract it could be a meeting of certain agreed upon prior demands.
Correct.
So it could be you pay me for 3 years, current, make every payment on time, then you get a guarantee.
The house is yours.
Yeah.
Correct.
Okay.
And it's always somebody's in distress. Either the seller or the buyer is in distress. Buyer doesn't have the credit to get a new loan in those days, or in today's world, nobody can get a loan, in fact. So.
Well, you know, and this is, it's kind of interesting. Our, in the hard money loan side, we have investors buying properties at cash flow, and we have investors that put money in 9.9% trust deed investments. And smart money is on both sides of that table.
Right.
And in this particular time frame, you could have smart people on both sides of those decisions. And it could even be in on a property that's almost, let's say, a break even. I got a Moreno Valley house. I bought it 2 years ago, so the price really hasn't damaged, but I just had a job shift. So I owe $140 on a $135 house. I'm $5,000 upside down, and if I list it with you and go through the normal cost, I'm writing a $20,000 check to escape, right?
Correct.
I've got somebody over here who's renting for $1,300, the same house in Moreno Valley, could make a deal to where he puts up X amount of dollars for security deposit or whatever, paying a commission, and walk into a payment that's probably $900 with a chance of owning it. See, that to me starts making some sense, and you, that's why I think it's got a future pretty quickly.
Well, so the interest rate in the loan becomes now more valuable. In the old days, the equity was valuable.
Yeah.
Now the loan is valuable.
Absolutely, yeah. Because, see, that's when we go forward, when I got in the business was in 1981, I refied my house at 17.5% interest. So to have interest rate sub 4% is completely ridiculous. I certainly can envision an 8% mortgage rate 5 years from now or some time frame in the future.
Certainly.
So bragging rights would be, you know, somebody asking you someday, well, what's your interest rate for? That's worth money.
Of course.
Yeah, it really is. And I know that lenders will be very sensitive to that at some point, but I can't imagine at the moment or for the next few years that's standing in the way of saying, do you want to foreclose or shall we find a buyer that still makes it current? See, that it also speeds up the healing process. If they want stability from going from owner to vacancy to whatever, I mean, that transition, there's a lot of already damaged people. So when you're talking about 80% of your business is credit incapable of buying a new home, they are payment capable of owning one in this circumstance.
Exactly.
And then realtors can make a living, too, not having to count on a group of buyers that won't emerge for 3 years.
Exactly.
So
it can absorb the next 2 or 3 years of people who are still waiting.
It's really one of the we've got two big underserved groups financially, your financing-wise. The group that just lost their property and the group of investors who could buy and hold rentals. You know, and if we would think this out, thinking about how we did it in the past, we could solve this pretty quickly, and I think pretty without a bunch of damage. I think, Mike, if you had a bunch of REOs where it was sort of earmarked for owner-occupants, I don't even care if it's first, but if eventually there's a little pile of them that go investors and it's 5 or 10 at a time, and the mandate is you can't sell them for 5 years, but they give us financing, I mean, that would be game over.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you'd have more business you knew what to do with.
And the investors will save the day eventually. Even if they're not allowed to, they will still do it some way or another. They'll find a way to do it because they're creative.
Well, and that brings up a point of understanding the whole concept of what you're talking about. I remember one time I sold a property to a lady on Polk Street in Riverside, and it was in a land trust. And an AITD on top of that. And so she got the property, but then she sort of talked to her team later. And the tax guy said, when you write the check, you're not going to get the right to, you're not going to get to deduct the interest because it's not in your name and blah, blah, blah. And the attorney, and all of a sudden this lady calls me crying. She couldn't understand that she owned the house. And I couldn't make her team understand that she owned the house. So I finally said, okay, do you want me just to buy the house back? She said, yes, I really would. I said, okay, do you know how you're going to have to give me that house? You're going to have to grant deed it to me because you own it. But I guess that leads to my question. Is this concept difficult for people to understand the difference between a grant deed and a land contract or even an AITD, and is it necessary for an escrow to be experienced with it?
Yes and yes. people do have a difficulty understanding, and it's kind of funny, though, because I think if you lay it out correctly and simply for a person, they do understand it. It's no different than buying anything else. I promise to pay this. I will get the grant deed or the pink slip, if you will, 5 years from now when I've made all my payments on time and the following other things have occurred. I think they understand that. Many real estate offices, certainly in the past, have simply refused to do any kind of these creative financing, whether it's seller-carried financing or AITDs or land contracts, which has been wonderful for us, of course, because we have the ability. But one of the things I've insisted on is that we will not do one of those transactions unless we control the escrow, because I need to know that our escrow people know how to do it and can explain it to the people whenever they have questions.
I think that's absolutely mandatory. It's been my experience over being, you know, an investor for 30 years where, I mean, there's some escrows that are worth their weight in gold, and there's some that just, right. Are you paid to cause problems? I mean, you're just stunned by the questions they come up with, and you just shake your head. So in this particular set of circumstances, I think there's no doubt. And do you ever have people going, can I talk to somebody that's done it? I mean, that worked for them? I mean, to me, that would be one of those things I think would be valuable.
I don't know that I've ever heard that asked, but I think by the time we finish explaining it to them, they're pretty comfortable with the idea.
Out of the ones that you did in the 90s, because if you did them in the early 90s, there wasn't equity progression for quite some time. What were the odds of them staying together and being successful?
We did. I finally have decided to say we did over 1,000 of them. I think we did about 1,300 land contracts.
Okay.
There were three that actually went into distress and were either, you know, we were either threatened with lawsuits or fussed over. So out of about 1,300, we had three that really didn't get resolved and went bad, if you will.
Three.
My feeling is that it's a slam dunk. And the key to it is the people have to understand what they're doing up front. We had a number of people who came in 3 years or 4 years, and in those days, the length of time was critical. 3 years was too short a time. 5 years was really better. But we had a number of people who came in 5 years and said, I simply can't do it. I've you know, screwed my credit up again, or whatever the distress was. I can't do it, and we've got it resolved either with a reconveyance or a deed back or whatever it took. And everybody walked away relatively happy.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as people understand what they're doing, I think they're simple. They solve a lot of problems creatively, which is what this market needs.
Yes, it does. Are people gun-shy buying right now, Mike, as far as you go into escrow with a lot of properties? Are people falling out because they just go, I just don't know if this is the right decision?
I think when it's so easy to pick up any newspaper, listen to any TV show, any radio show, any type of media, all you hear is negative, or you go to work and you tell your coworkers, I just bought a house, and they chew you out because you made such a lame decision. It becomes hard to follow through. There's not a lot of support for buying a house today other than the cheap interest rates. But, you know, I just see a lot of this. I don't really have the deals fall out once they're in escrow over that. I think it's many people just to get up off the chair and go out and get in the market takes some courage today for a lot of people.
Sure. Fear is the biggest factor we're dealing with.
Well, and I tell you what, that's why I'm really married to my charts, because those take me away from emotional decision making, both on the high side and the ridiculously low side. Because, and if you're in escrow for the first time in your life, it's sort of like when you buy a new car, you know, you drive off the lot and you go, man, one every 10 cars is exactly this.
Right.
Well, when you're in escrow for the first time in your life, all of a sudden you're now tuning into news that you probably heard but didn't really hear. And now all of a sudden everything is, oh my gosh, you know, right. And you start going, I don't know if this is correct, even if you're locking in a 4% 30-year mortgage. I mean, I can't imagine that being replicated in our lifetime. Once we leave this cycle, I think we're going to see a chart that goes the other way for a considerable period of time.
And young buyers today don't have any comparison. So
no.
They don't think it's a great deal. They're not drawn by the 4%.
That's right. As a matter of fact, God forbid that stuff gets up to 4.5. Man.
Then you will lose deals over it. When it was like 4.5, I had a couple of deals that went up to 5 and people walked. It was just terrible. And I tried to tell them, you know, when I bought a house, the first one. It was 13.5%, and I was happy to get it.
Well, they were half your age. That's the problem.
Yeah, and it is. It's a perspective, but that payment that emerges from this discounted price is astonishing. But it may be just some of us that have had experience before actually really appreciate it. What basic changes do you think are going to come about because of this downturn in the future of, let's say, financing for real estate, down payments, stuff like that? Do you think there's going to be permanent changes, or are we just going through the motions politically to make everybody happy?
I think there'll be permanent changes. The problem today is it's become so hard, if you're loaning money to buy houses, to enforce your contract, to get your collateral back if you make a mistake. If you compare it to car sales are way up from 3 years ago. Why? Because they can enforce their contracts. You don't pay for your car, they come take it. With houses, it's almost impossible to enforce your contract now, so the financing is very tough. I'm sure that will probably get a little easier someday at some point, but do I ever think it will be what it once was? No.
Well, and it shouldn't be what it was
no.
from 2003 to 2008.
No. That was crazy.
But I think there will be a little bit more of a push for maybe a 5% down payment will become the minimum versus 3% with a Fannie or Freddie type of purchase. But as I think, Bruce, you've pointed out very accurately, The VA program has a very low failure rate, and it's 0% down. So yeah. there is a way to do it. It's called underwriting.
Yeah, underwriting and
very
qualifying
simply.
Somebody. You know, that's the one thing about the hard money loan business just puts you in the seat of making common sense decisions. Are we likely to get paid monthly and get paid back? I mm-hmm. mean, that's really exactly. what it boils down to. And I get the sense that VA is sort of in that same decision process where the whole world is driven by a FICO score, and yet they can make common sense decisions that look like, you know what, we're going to get paid back and make successful loans. Yeah. Do you see things, let's say, interest rate deductions bite the dust?
I'm not convinced that will make as big a difference. I think most people's perception of their interest rate deduction is much greater than the actual event.
Yeah.
They think, oh boy, I'm going to save all these taxes. And the truth is, it's not that big a deal.
Well, at 4%, you got to owe a bit of money to pass these,
exactly.
whatever the basic deduction is.
Right.
So,
right.
yeah, they probably have to owe, what, 300 grand or more before that actually
probably
would be
before it's even relevant.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah, and
right.
that's now become.
I don't think that's a real factor.
Okay. I mean, only a couple minutes left. I think politically, there was another document drawn up where there was the two sides of the panel where the Democrats and Republicans had input on what to do about the budget. And to me, real estate seems like a piece of low-hanging fruit. I mean, we've had a lot of goodies for a while, and I think that we're going to give up some of those goodies. And if I was on the real estate side like CAR or National Association of Realtors, I'd find a sacrificial lamb to go, here, take this one back. And I think one of them that I would say would be the 500 grand freebie. That's every 2 years. I mean, I was surprised when they came up with that, even though we happen to own properties where that would be affected. I think nationally, what percentage of people could ever take advantage of that?
Probably not many.
Yeah, not right. many.
So, maybe every 5 years.
Well, or yeah, you'd like to think that. Yeah. yeah. But in other words, you have to own $1 million house or something right. for that to even occur.
Right.
So if in right. fact they're going to take some of our things away, inside of 45 seconds now, Prop 13.
I hope it doesn't change. I don't know that I'd be willing to give that up. I think that
could be pretty damaging.
I think that could be damaging. Yes.
Well,
because that would allow taxes to go up 2 or 3 times.
Yeah, and affect people that own things free and clear.
Right.
I interviewed an economist that's well known, and he had a very sensitive comment. He said that's what they have for reverse loans for. Wow. Once again, Ted, go ahead and give me your information on your website.
Well, I'm going to throw in our escrow company, which is American Independent Escrow, Inc. It is in Moreno Valley, and it's a great escrow. No website particularly, just contact American Independent Escrow, Inc.
All right. Ted and Mike, thanks a lot for joining me.
You're welcome. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.